The court will proceed to the third case of the day. Stephanie versus Naperville School District. Mr. Holman.
Yes, good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, counsel, James Holman appearing on behalf of Lawrence Stepney, the plaintiff appellant. This is a case of a African-American male who worked for an extended period of time with School District 203, initially as a full-time bus driver. He sustained a serious injury to his right knee at work, was off for an extended period of time, both as a paid leave and an unpaid leave. I think the record does reflect that the unpaid leave ended with an attempt to terminate his employment. That did not happen. The board did not process that. The district then met with Stepney in an attempt to replace him, or not replace him in terms of his employment, but place him in employment, rather, whether it be as a bus driver or in some other comparable employment. The question, or the problem from both a disability and race discrimination point of view is whether the district successfully provided, as it was required to by the collective bargaining agreement, Stepney with comparable employment. The trial court ruling on the issue exclusively of whether Stepney had timely filed his charge of discrimination determined that he had not timely filed, and summary judgment was granted.
Well, even if let's assume the charge was timely, how do you respond to the district's argument that Stepney was not qualified for the position of bus driver when he returned in 99 because he didn't have a valid bus driver's permit?
Well, that's kind of a catch-22 argument. He had been off work for at least a year and a half. His he had not been driving a bus. His bus driver permit lapsed during that time.
Right, but isn't there a, what about Clifton Reif? He had a situation where he was hired back as a probationary driver, but only after he got his permit. Didn't he have some gap in service as well?
From what I understand, he had a gap in mm-hmm. service as well, but not anything as extensive as Lawrence had. And
in order to get the bus driver's permit, do you have to be employed as a bus driver? I thought that was something you could get without.
It's my understanding that they kind of intersect. You have to be employed. You have to have a reason to drive the a bus in order to get the permit. The permit is processed through both and the record may not be clear on this, but the permit is processed through both the union and the district. They assist in filling out the application, sending it to the state, that
right.
kind of thing.
And had that been done for your client?
Not until he returned from leave. And
right.
by the time he returned from leave, the permit had already lapsed.
Right. So now he's back at leave. Is there any reason he can't reapply even in his status, you know, even though he was in the other category?
He did. That is how he eventually ended up driving the bus part-time, is once it was determined that he was back to work, and once it was determined that his permit had lapsed, there was some bureaucratic problem in terms of Lawrence submitted one application, as I recall. There was a delay in it, but finally he did get his permit, And once he got his permit,
he was fine for part-time. But, I mean, exactly. In 1999, he didn't have. Because that's the really the time at issue, wasn't it, in 99 when he applied?
Right. Your Honor is correct. I mean, the catch-22 is once he's back from leave, he doesn't have a permit. After he gets his permit, he's been moved to a situation where he's a full-time BD instructor, and that movement is also an issue in terms of was it comparable employment. There's a couple of phrases that are part of the collective bargaining agreement and part of the District 203 culture that kind of need clarification. There's the issue of seniority, which is a collective bargaining issue, I would argue, and then there's the issue of a service within the district. Service within the district would be, as in Lawrence's case, taking his time as a bus driver and counting his years of service as a bus driver when transferred over to his BD employment as entitling him to both the credit of service hours for your general protections under the agreement, such as service protections against layoff and benefits, and crediting that years of service for purposes of pay.
And then, but the collective bargaining agreement doesn't cover him for purposes of pay, as I understand the agreement, right? He has to start afresh.
Well, I think the collective bargaining agreement is ambiguous, and the way that it was interpreted by the district and by the union covering the BD teachers was that they did what their argument is that they did what they could. Then they met with one another to see if Lawrence could be given a special circumstance. No agreement was reached on that issue, and so he maintains today this dual criteria of pay credits as if he was starting anew as a new employee, and service credit or credits for seniority purposes for protection on health insurance benefits and layoffs. The pay per hour between a starting BD teacher and where Lawrence would have been had his seniority not been transferred or interrupted with the bus drivers union indicates that there's about a $2 to $3 an hour gap between what he would have made as a bus driver and what he's making currently as a BD teacher. The other problem with the way his seniority service has been handled is that now as a part-time bus driver, the pecking order in terms of choosing assignments as a bus driver, and the higher you are in seniority, if you're number one in seniority, you get the first pick of a bus route. And there are easy bus routes, and there are hard bus routes. The lower you are down in the pecking order, what's left is the more difficult bus routes. With his knee, which is now allows him to drive a bus, with his knee, however, the more difficult routes cause him to have more pain and irritation and have to adjust it. So these easy routes, while you're paid the same, are out of reach for him from a seniority purpose. And that's our argument in terms of having been adversely affected or not being provided comparable employment. I notice my time is just about up. Before I conclude, I know I'm coming back for rebuttal. Do any of your honors have additional questions?
Well, I think that it may be your rebuttal time.
Yeah,
it's running out.
Oh, okay. Then you all. I'll sit down.
All right. Mr. Zahi?
Thank you, your honors. Good morning. Jeff Zay on behalf of the district. And I, if it pleases the court, I'd like to cut to the quick because Mr. Holman, with all due respect, is arguing the arguments that were made to the district and to the union between August of 1999 and May of 2000. Those were the arguments that were made. The answer was given to those arguments to Mr. Stepney on May 20th, 2000. And that answer was, no, we're not going to make an adjustment to the collective bargaining agreement for you, and you will continue in the job you chose when you were unqualified as a bus driver, that job being the behavioral disorder teaching assistant. That happened on May 20th, 2000. It is an uncontested fact in this case that on that date, through the mouth of Mr. Stepney at his deposition, said, at that point, I knew I was discriminated against on the basis of race and also, to a lesser extent, on the basis of my disability. He recognized at that point, at least in his mind, that he was being discriminated against. And that is when the 300-day period began to run. Your Honors, this is, with all due respect, and I understand Your Honors' questions regarding the substance of the matter, but Judge Lindberg got to the first issue that we raised in our summary judgment motion, that decided the case, and I think that it should, and I implore the court that it decide the case now.
Well, how do you deal with Reese, though, where this court held that a plaintiff's allegation that he did not receive a higher pay raise because he was African-American was governed by the rule that each new paycheck is a separate wrong? Why shouldn't we apply that doctrine here?
Your Honor,
I don't think we even have to get to that because in terms of the substantive argument, but if we choose to resolve that question, I mean, why doesn't it apply?
Your Honor, I think in Reese, this court recognized that the Brazemore rule of each separate paycheck is a narrow alley, and it's somewhat restricted. This is not a paycheck case, though. In those cases, there was some length of time that the plaintiff did not even realize that he was being paid less. And it took, in Reese, I believe, it was three and a half years before he realized that there was that 40-cent discrepancy in his paycheck. It was the paycheck that raised the issue to the plaintiff in that case. This isn't a paycheck case. If you look at as Stepney's EEOC complaint, he doesn't even mention pay. All he's talking about is seniority. He was denied his seniority through that change in job status or just change in jobs that he chose from the bus driver to the behavioral assistant, teaching assistant. That was his choice. When he made that choice, he lost his seniority. That's all he's complaining about. That was the only thing he mentioned in his EEOC complaint. I lost my seniority. And then there's all these lingering effects of losing that seniority. Your Honor, I would, and one of which is pay. The other is this choice of bus route when he was working as a part-time bus driver. The bottom line is that this case, I would suggest to Your Honor, that is more like Dasgupta, if I pronounce the name correctly, where the professor lost his tenure. And then the residual effect of losing your tenure is having an impact on your pay. The court recognized that loss of tenure was the discrete act of alleged discrimination, which started the 300-day period running. Just like here, it was the May 20th, 2000 denial of tenure or denial of union seniority that was the act that started the 300-day rule running. The pay issue is something that was a residual effect of that and is not independently actionable. Similarly, it's not a continuing violation theory, as the appellant suggests in his brief, that being an act during the 300-day period, which then raises the issue of discrimination and then implicates and brings in other acts outside the 300-day period. That doesn't occur here either. I raised to the court's attention to the fact that the only dates that you'll find in the appellant's brief is May 20th, 2000, and then the EEOC complaint thereafter. There's no he mentions no benchmark in between in that 600-day period because there aren't any. Everything happened when the union said we're not going to transfer your seniority because we can't due to the collective bargaining agreement. That happened 610 days before his EEOC complaint was filed. That's untimely, and he cannot pursue his charges as a result. That's the bottom line, Your Honors. There are other substantive reasons that made summary judgment appropriate, but I'd ask you to affirm Judge Lindberg based on the timeliness issue. Unless there's any questions, Your Honors, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Holton.
Thank you, Your Honors. Just very briefly, Mr. Stepney, while somewhat educated, is not an attorney, did not have, this isn't in the record, but when he goes to file his charge, he goes to the EEOC. They assist him in filing the charge. Yes, he does use the term seniority. The problem is this term is in the employee's mind equivalent to if I have 10 years of seniority, I'm going to get paid as a 10-year employee. And so the absence of seniority equals, in the appellant's mind, a diminution in pay. Seniority for his purposes was all about pay, and in his deposition and in the record, his concern moving over to BD was that he be paid comparably. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Mr. Holman. Thank you, Mr. Sahi. The case is taken under advisement.